You're listening to The Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Eduardo Mercado III. He's a professor of psychology at the University of Buffalo and a Guggenheim Fellow. He's the author of Principles of Cognition, Finding Minds. He's also a co-author of Learning and Memory, From Brain to Behavior. But today, Professor Mercado is here to talk about his latest book, which seems to be a bit of a departure from his previous ones. It's titled Why Whales Sing, published by Johns Hopkins Press. Welcome to the exchange, Professor Mercado.
Well, thank you for having me.
In your previous books, you delve into the minds of humans. Now, it seems like you're diving deep into the minds of whales. What happened?
I actually have been studying the minds of mammals for my entire career, going back and forth between whales and humans. I've also studied dogs, gerbils, rats. And in general, I'm interested in sort of the abstract conceptual abilities that different organisms have and what about brains allows humans and other animals to learn new things.
You're not a marine biologist, right?
No, I'm a psychologist slash neuroscientist who does some work on marine animals.
Okay, so what attracted you to the sounds of whales?
So it's a long story. I originally did my graduate work at the University of Hawaii studying dolphin cognition in a very unique laboratory. And while I was there, I encountered the songs of humpback whales. It wasn't originally a major focus that I intended to study, but the more I became exposed to them, the more interested I became in them.
Well, here in the Pacific Northwest, several species of whales are endangered, including humpback whales, which are featured prominently in your book. What does your research reveal as possible solutions?
Right. So yeah, along your coast, there are multiple whales that are known to sing, including humpback whales, but also blue whales and fin whales, all of which potentially face similar problems when it comes to human encroachment on their environments. And in the context of my book, I'm specifically focused on sound, but many things that humans do can affect sound, including changing the climate temperature. So I would say that I feel like humans are probably having effects on all the populations of whales without being aware of what they're doing. And part of the goal of this book is to get a better sense about what might be happening in their environments.
So why are the sounds that whales make regarded as singing?
Yeah, that's a great question. They weren't really referred to as singing until the early 1970s. The main factors that made people start thinking of them as being singers were that specifically humpback whales were producing these complex patterns and repeating them in precise ways that were pretty similar to what had been seen in bird songs. And they also seemed to be using them in the same kinds of context that singing birds were thought to use their songs. And so they kind of inherited that term from birds, who inherited it from humans.
You write that you weren't particularly enamored with whale songs, and yet here you are having written an entire book about them.
Yeah, it's funny. The first time I heard whale songs, I was like not convinced that what I was hearing was the right thing to call singing. If you've ever heard them, many of the sounds they make sound like someone who's very ill. They're not very melodic. There are some sounds they make that sound more musical, but many of the sounds are kind of grunty or like groaning and pain. And so just in the terms of aesthetics, it did not map onto I was in a chorus and in a band, and it didn't strike me as being particularly musical. But I was curious about why they were doing this very complex patterning of sounds, because most mammals don't do things like that. And so that's kind of what got me sucked in initially. And then the more I looked at what they were doing, the more confused I became. So it was sort of like a scientific mystery story that I was trying to find the whodunit or the solution to that got me going.
Okay, it sounds like they're not singing melodies, but they're singing something. Take me back to when the first whale song was recorded and why.
Well, the first whale songs that were recorded by the military in their efforts to monitor the sounds of enemy ships. And often they didn't know they were recording the whales because they couldn't see what was the source of the sound. They just knew that it wasn't a machine and it probably was some kind of animal. And then eventually they figured out that these animals making these sounds were whales. But at that point, most scientists either hadn't heard them because they hadn't had access to the recordings, or if they had heard them, they weren't sure what they were hearing. So this was like in the 1950s when they first started sort of documenting some evidence suggesting that what they were hearing were whales.
Okay, so who were the scientists that discovered that these sounds actually meant something?
Okay, so the first researchers that described in the scientific literature what specifically humpback whales were doing when they were making sounds were Roger Payne and Scott McVeigh, and then Howard Wynn and Lois Wynn. And they kind of did it in parallel, in collaboration with some other people. They were both recording whales in the early of the late 1960s, and basically looking at them for the first time using some new techniques that allowed you to visualize the sound so that they could kind of look at all the sounds that were occurring over hours at once. And that's when they were able to see the patterns that they realized were what constituted a kind of song.
My guest is Professor Eduardo Mercado III. He's the author of Why Whales Sing. So, Professor, what did the military do with all the recordings that they have?
That's a good question. They're probably still classified. I haven't seen them in the published in the literature anywhere. But the good thing that happened from that in terms of making recordings available is that one of the military individuals who were making recordings became personally interested in them, such that when he left the military, he started trying to record himself. And he collected a bunch of recordings that he did make available, including to Roger Payne. And so ultimately it was this experience in the military hearing these sounds that led to a lot of the first recordings of singing whales. I think it's still the case probably that the military is recording more whales than anybody else, but that we're just not seeing most of those recordings because for, I guess, obvious reasons.
So do whales have different songs for different reasons?
So that's a kind of a tricky question. So different species of, so first of all, the whales that sing are all baleen whales. And different species of baleen whales, like blue whales or fin whales or humpback whales, do have distinctive songs so that you can identify which species of whale is singing based on what you're hearing. But then within species, if you focus on specifically the humpback whale, who has the most kind of dynamic songs, at least that have been identified so far, they're actually changing their songs their whole lifespan. So they don't settle in on one song like most birds do. They tend to keep on, well, they do change from year to year, whatever songs they're producing. So that if you recorded the same whale, you know, 5 years after you recorded it the first time, you would hear it producing a different song.
So are whales, particularly humpback whales, the most prolific of the singing whales, are they being creative with their songs or do they have some sort of meaning?
Could be both. I mean, I would say that most people who've listened to humpback whales would describe the things they're doing as very flexible. They're not just producing the same sounds over and over again. They're actually modifying the sounds and the patterns they produce each time they produce them. So it's kind of like a DJ modifying transitions between different patterns that are being produced. They're kind of amazing because, you know, they're quite large animals, but they can make sounds that are higher than what a human can make in terms of pitch. And lower. A single whale can produce the entire range of the human species from the lowest any human can produce to the highest, any higher than the highest human can produce. And within that range, they do all kinds of different things, which are quite impressive vocally.
Okay, so I don't mean to be flippant with this next question, but do they sing together, like in a band?
I would not say like in a band, but they do sing where there are multiple whales that can be heard at the same time. These are called choruses, so kind of like a band. But when you listen to this, and it's only in certain locations where you can hear the whales doing this, where there's lots of singers that are specifically humpback whales in this general area, they don't sing together. They're not close together when they sing. So they're often like 1 or 2 or 3 miles apart from each other, but they're so loud that their songs travel like 10 miles. And so they don't have to be that close for them to all be able to hear each other. And so you can often hear multiple whales singing, and it just sounds like almost like a band warming up, maybe, and that they're all kind of doing their own thing. At least is what it sounds like.
So you write that whales are regarded as songbirds of the sea.
Right. So ever since the first reports of the whales, they've been compared to singing birds, and that's been true for the last 50 years. Part of that is because of the fact that most of the whales that have been sexed seem to be males, and they seem to be producing these complex pattern sounds like songbirds. They have been compared to canaries and several other kinds of songbirds. I think most people that study humpback whales would say that they're basically like underwater songbirds. I do not fit into that crowd. I'm like the sole scientist that suggests that what they're doing is nothing like what a songbird is doing.
Oh, I want to get into that. But for now, when whales sing, what happens when other whales hear that song?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it depends a lot on which whales are hearing them. So, well, first of all, it's hard to tell because they're so far apart that when scientists are studying them and they're underwater, so they can't see them very well. You often don't know what other whales are doing when the whales are hearing any other whale. And so it's quite tricky to kind of monitor the reactions, but there are studies that use playbacks of different sounds, including songs. And in these playback studies with humpback whales, specifically in Hawaii, the main findings are that female whales don't seem to come near the speakers that are playing back song, but males do. So males will approach the speaker and then just kind of look at it like, what is this thing? It's not a whale. But and if you monitor whales that are interacting in the kind of in their natural scenario, it's also almost always, basically always, males that are coming to be with other singers, and then they only stay there for a short time and then leave. So it's a very unique kind of interaction that's happening, and it's very difficult to interpret what's going on in that context.
So it's kind of interesting because you write that some of the first observations about singing humpback whales suggested that they sang more and were more audible in tropical breeding areas. But you're saying they're attracting other males more than females.
Yeah, so I don't know if this is because scientists like to go to tropical islands to do research, or that's just the most convenient place to study whales. But pretty much all the early studies, which were done in places like Hawaii, Puerto Rico, Bermuda, they were all finding lots of singers there and not so much singers in other places. But part of that was just because it's hard to get access to whales that aren't near to like where your boat can launch. So since that time, it's been discovered that whales are singing all over the oceans when they're migrating from Alaska to Hawaii, in Alaska while they're migrating in Hawaii. So they thought it was all kind of during this one time of the year, but then they realized it was actually much of the year. And they thought that the males were singing to attract females, but when they actually studied it, they discovered it was not females that were being attracted. So there's all these kind of new discoveries that have been made that made people question what's happening.
Okay, so which whales sing? Do the males sing only, or do the males and females sing, and which species sing, or do all of them sing?
Well, for sure males sing. Every study that's looked at any species of singing baleen whale has made some observations of males singing. There's some debate about whether females sing. They don't seem to sing in the context where males do.
I'm sorry, you said that females don't sing?
They don't sing in the same context that males do, but there are some observations to suggest that females do sing in certain circumstances. And they've only been studied in the tropics, so it's not clear in other areas if they might be singing in situations that people haven't actually studied yet, like in context of feeding up around Alaska, and actually maybe even migrating like along the coasts of Oregon and California. There are very few documented instances of a female singing, but there's also very few documented instances of whales mating. As a matter of fact, humpback whales, there's never been an observation of them mating, which is a little bit crazy. So they do things that people don't see all the time. I would say that we know for sure that males of most species of baleen whales are singing. I think personally that there's still data to be collected, but to determine whether or not the females sing. It used to be the case that people thought that only male birds sang until people started studying lots of different species in lots of different contexts. And then they realized, oh, wait, females are singing. We just hadn't been studying them before to be able to see it or hear it.
I have about a minute left, but I want to get started on this process of how you collect the data and then study it.
So with the whales that are along the coasts of like Hawaii and Puerto Rico, places like that, often the way it's done is to try to take a boat out, find some whales, put in a underwater microphone called a hydrophone until you hear them, and then record when you find them. That's one main approach. The other approach is to put these same kinds of hydrophones on the bottom of the ocean and just leave them there for months at a time. And then you can analyze, like, you know, months of data. And a lot of my recent analyses have focused on recordings made by the National Oceanographic Association, who've made all of their data available. And they have lots of recordings of whales that they didn't intend to collect. And so they have, like, thousands of hours of recordings of just ocean with whales happening to make sounds as they go by. So that's one way to get a lot of data to look and see what's happening. You can tell where the whales are at, which whales are there, when they're there, and how they're varying their sounds over time.
And now we can turn audio into visual data.
Yeah, you can do all kinds of things, like use the sounds to localize and track them. You can see the details of the way they're modifying the sounds over time and compare them across days or months or years, and which you couldn't ever do before, and make very precise measurements of how they're modifying their sounds when they hear each other, when things are happening. And that's, I think, going to be key to understanding what they're doing.
Okay, let's take a short break. My guest is Professor Eduardo Mercado III. He's the author of Why Whales Sing. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Professor Eduardo Mercado III, author of Why Whales Sing. Now, Professor, you worked at IBM. How did that experience inspire you towards studying marine animals?
Yeah, that's an interesting random change of trajectory. So when I was at IBM, I was working on computer hardware design, basically looking at chips and trying to get certain kinds of code and chips to work. It's what I had been trained to do as an undergraduate. And I was doing it in a kind of context of let's make better computers for Walmart. And in doing that, I kind of discovered that I wasn't as motivated to make money for Walmart as maybe I would have thought I would have been as an undergraduate. And so I spent a lot of time just thinking about other topics related to architecture of things like computers that could do different things. And that's how I got interested in sort of understanding how brains and neural networks work. Ultimately, I became so interested in that aspect of it, even though it wasn't what I'd been trained to do, that I switched gears and went to graduate school to study essentially what some of the oddest brains on the planet could do, which were the brains of dolphins.
And speaking of dolphins, you wrote a little bit about them in your book. I'd like for you to read an excerpt, if you would.
Sure. This is from a chapter talking about the mechanisms whales and dolphins use to make sound. Dolphins are known to spontaneously imitate sounds they hear around them, and they are startling good mimics. I still remember the first time a dolphin imitated me as I whistled some random tune while walking past her tank. The Paris recordings were the first time anyone had observed dolphins imitating a singing whale. The song sounds that the dolphins imitated were much lower in pitch than a dolphin can comfortably produce, so they transposed them up an octave. Even then, the imitated song sounds were 5 octaves below the pitches of typical dolphin sounds. Notably, the dolphins only copied units from humpback songs, ignoring the timing and patterning of units within those songs. I know from personal experience that dolphins can easily match the timing and patterning of whistled melodies, so dolphins are not rhythmically challenged. It's more likely that the patterns within humpback whale songs are just too spread out in time for dolphins to recognize that there is a pattern. Dolphin whistles are like words in that their properties can change multiple times within a second. In contrast, a single phrase within a humpback whale song can last 40 seconds or more, with seconds of silence between each unit within the phrase, slower than sloths speaking cartoons. If you play back whale songs, or even human singing at slowed down rates, you will see that it's harder to hear the rhythmic patterns. For a dolphin, even a single phrase within a whale song likely lasts an eternity.
That's amazing. Why would a dolphin try to imitate a whale song?
Yeah, well, so dolphins are famous for being playful. And I think for them, when they encounter these novel acoustic events, like a person whistling or a humpback whale sound, you've never heard one before, they're immediately curious about like if they can do it themselves, and then they'll try it out. So vocal play is quite common in dolphins, especially young dolphins. They imitate all kinds of sounds, including human speech in some contexts.
And you discovered that by a dolphin imitating you?
I didn't discover it. It had been discovered long before I started looking at dolphins, but I guess I personally discovered it because I had read about it but never actually experienced it. And when I did experience it myself, it was kind of mind-boggling just how precisely they had copied me with such little exposure to what they'd heard, probably better than what most people can do.
That's amazing. You write in your book, a morphing mix of rhythmic tweets and moves. What does that mean?
So one of the main reasons why humpback whales have gotten so much attention from scientists is because the sound sequences they produce are so much more complex than other mammals. If you look at all the other primates other than humans, there's no primate producing anything as complex in terms of the quantity and variety of sounds as what these whales are producing. Also, just the rhythmic structure is quite complex. Like if you look at sort of the patterns in time, they're doing all kinds of sophisticated things that even birds don't do in many cases. One of the things I think is interesting about humpback whale singing is why are they making all these complex sounds? It's only basically humans and humpback whales on the planet that are doing this in this sort of very sophisticated way. So I feel like maybe we can understand a bit more about, you know, the way humans' minds have converged with the minds of a humpback whale by looking at these songs. And also just more about like things that we are not aware of in terms of what's possible to use sounds in these very different environments.
So when a dolphin imitates a whale, are whales tricked by that imitation?
I seriously doubt it. First of all, the dolphins tend to do things faster than the whales in general. And so when a dolphin's making sounds, it may produce sounds for maybe like 30 seconds or a minute in a bout and then go off and do something else. When humpback whales are singing, they can sing 13 to 20 hours straight without stopping. So it's not like a subtle thing. Fin whales will sing for like 40 hours without stopping, which is kind of crazy. I don't know if this is general knowledge, but whales are unihemispheric sleepers, which means they're never fully asleep because they're voluntary breathers. And so from the time they're born, they're basically conscious until they die. and they can sing with nonstop without taking a break, and they don't seem to get tired. So it's pretty impressive.
So you're saying they rarely sleep or don't sleep?
They don't sleep with both sides of their brain like most mammals do. They do like rest, like they'll hang and not move for long periods of time, but they're still aware. And if you come up to them, they'll react immediately. It hasn't been studied in the large whales because it's quite hard, but in the dolphins, bottlenose dolphin, you can actually monitor their brain and see that half their brain is in a sleep-like state while the other half still aware and controlling actions. And they can do a task made for them by a human for like 2 weeks without taking a break and make very few mistakes. To say they're sleeping, it's they're sleeping maybe with half their brain, but performance-wise, you can't tell the difference.
My guest is Professor Eduardo Mercado III. He's the author of Why Whales Sing. Professor, you introduced the idea of whales using echolocation. Then you introduce an argument against it. Why'd you do that?
Well, I guess I was trying to be fair. So the current belief amongst every whale researcher pretty much is that baleen whales do not echolocate at all. So they don't use sound to detect anything in their environment in the way that a dolphin or a bat might. So in the book, I present this argument as sort of the status quo belief about what's possible for whales. But then in the book itself, I'm trying to argue that this is a mistake and that baleen whales probably are doing things using echolocation that are more sophisticated than what dolphins can do, and that people just haven't realized it yet because they're not understanding what's happening. So one of the main arguments in this book is that what we're calling singing is actually a kind of echolocation that humpback whales are using to detect targets from 2, 3, 4 miles away, which is way more than any dolphin or bat can achieve.
What are they trying to detect?
So you have to imagine if you're a whale, I just told you that they can sing like day and night without taking a break. And at night in the ocean, when you're underwater, your ability to perceive things around you is extremely limited. And these whales are not together. Most singers, more than 80% of singers that have been identified were by themselves. And it's in a time when they're definitely attempting to mate. So you have to say, like, why is this whale by itself if it's trying to mate? Because that's not going to work. My belief about what's happening is that these whales are trying to identify the locations of other whales, especially females, because they're males mainly singing, but also other males. So essentially, they're trying to see in this almost like in the same way that a flying raptor would, by scanning large regions of the water that they can't possibly visually access using sound, and essentially scanning their horizons with their songs.
So does your research show that once they have identified other males or females, other whales in the area, that they move toward them?
My research hasn't shown that, but other research that happened before mine did show it. There were observations where they were tracking singers and non-singers and showing that the singers were doing things like they would sing, they would stop singing, and then rush off in the direction of another whale, say 3 miles away. And then the other whale would change directions, and then the whale would start singing again, and then it would change directions afterwards. So essentially, it's kind of like a Marco Polo game where the other person's never sang polo, but nevertheless, the singer was able to figure out where these whales are at and where they're going, even when they're trying to avoid them.
Okay, so that's confusing. If a whale is trying to avoid other whales and some whales are getting together in groups, how do whales travel? Do they travel in groups, or do they prefer being alone?
They're usually in small, either groups less than two. In the context of the breeding regions where the humpback whales have been studied the most, the groups that are seen are usually like one female being followed by two or more males. And so it's basically what's happening in the groups is the males are coming together to essentially follow a female around until presumably eventually at some point they might have a chance to mate with her, but probably only one of them. And so the males that are following are usually competing. So you can imagine that if there's a female and there's a male trying to like be with her, one way to kind of like choose, or I guess choose a non-mate would be to avoid them. And so you can think of it as like, there's females there, they're swimming around, they're not swimming to the singing males, they're not swimming towards males in general, but the males are definitely trying to swim towards them. And then once one male finds a female, other males will also tend to join them as well. So it's kind of like a group competition for being with a female.
Okay, I get that. That sounds human. Does that create a brawl? Does, you know, some big fight breaks out?
Often the groups of males that are following the female will get into physical altercations, and they're huge.
So they can do some serious damage. There'll be blood. There's even a documented incident of a whale being killed in our competition for a female. So they're definitely interacting in pretty aggressive ways that are pretty intensively violent in some contexts.
Well, you also argue that whales use songs as sonar.
Yeah, so basically my belief about the song, based on the evidence I've been collecting over the last 30 years now, is that when they're putting out sounds, they're not putting out sounds to tell other whales, like, I'm here or I want to be your mate. They're putting out sounds so they can hear where other things are at. So after every sound they put out within the song, they're listening. And it's actually the listening part that's the important part in terms of what the singer's doing. He's listening for echoes. He's trying to interpret what the echoes mean about other whales, where they're moving, whether he should go. Because if a whale hears echoes coming from 2 miles away, it may take him 13 minutes to swim to that location. By the time he gets there, that whale's gone. So he has to predict in the future, where is this whale going to be at in 13 minutes? Can I catch them? So all the complexity of song, from my perspective, are essentially ways to achieve an extremely difficult goal of sensing, which is basically what the Navy is trying to do with their sonar systems, detect the movements of large objects from long distances and predict what they're going to do next.
Well, you make whales sound very smart, but you also say that they can hear.
Right. So they're hearing, they haven't been studied like in most other, you know, small mammals, because you can't really get them in a lab to see what their specific hearing abilities are. But they seem to be very sensitive to even small sounds. When somebody enters the water, they'll stop singing. And if you look at the anatomy of their ears, they have an extremely densely innervated, they have large numbers of neurons that are connected to their ears, monitoring what's happening, way more than what humans have. As many as what's seen in bats or dolphins. They're the only, no other mammals, I guess, other than bats and dolphins, come close to what is happening in the ear of a humpback whale. And so they definitely are doing some serious processing of sound, regardless of how they're using the song.
Okay, I have a couple of minutes left, and you introduced me to a new term I had never heard before, thalassophobia.
Right, thalassophobia, the fear of the deep, dark ocean, drowning. Yeah, there's sort of a primal fear of the darkness kind of thing, but in the context of being like by yourself and submerged with like critters coming around you. Yeah, so I don't know how common that is actually, but it's one of the many situations where I should say that this is a human thing. I don't think this is something that whales have to deal with. I don't think any of them are worried about being in the ocean submerged alone. But So I think, you know, we tend to view whales as kind of like kindred spirits, but their perspective is very different in certain respects. And I think like the things that we think would be normal, they think are scary. The things that we think are scary are probably what they think would be fun or normal.
Well, I know I spent 12 years in the military, a lot of it on ships. And if any sailor went overboard, thalassophobia is something we'd all be familiar with. Can't imagine being left out at sea in the deep, dark ocean, not knowing what's lurking underneath.
Yeah, I think for humans, it's like seems like the worst case scenario. But that's like everyday life for a whale. So, and I'm sure they have ways, they probably don't have like the lack of ability to predict what's going to happen and counteract what's going to happen. You know, humpback whales are very good at dealing with large predators like orcas and sharks and not being susceptible to the loss of those kinds of attacks. So maybe they have a little bit more defense system than what a human would have.
Are humpback whales the largest?
No, humpback whales are quite large, but blue whales are the largest. Also the lowest singers, their songs are so low that a human can't hear them without using some kind of electronics to modify the pitches.
Okay. In relation to the blue whales, how large are the humpback whales?
The typical humpback whale would be about like 12 to 15 meters long. So that's probably like almost a little over half the length of a typical blue whale, I think. But they're still, if you're near them, they're impressively large. They're bigger than most of the boats that are studying them. And when they come out of the water near you, you definitely, it's got a dinosaur feel to it.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you for educating us, Professor.
Yeah, no problem. It's great to talk to you.
My guest was Professor Eduardo Mercado III. He's the author of Why Whales Sing. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on JPR.